Hey guys, so before we begin, we just wanted to give a quick trigger warning for this podcast because the movies we are discussing involve racially motivated violence. So yeah, we just want to give you guys a quick trigger warning before we begin.
So this is a lifestyle and fandom podcast. Let's dive in.
Welcome back, guys. Hey, Sandy.
Hey, Jen.
We are back with another countdown to the Oscars episode. Yeah. And this time we are actually combining two movies in one. So you're going to get like double the trouble. Or what is it, like double the candy?
Double the trouble. Let's keep that one. That's a good one.
We're doing a little commercial for them. yeah. So we wanted to combine the movies because of a kind of time, because we wanted to make sure that you got because we liked a lot of the best pictures, so we want to make sure that we got all the ones we really liked across to you guys. And second, because these two kind of fall in similar storylines, which is very interesting for the time.
Super fun.
So we can get into it. The movies are, take it away, Sandy.
All right, so the movies are Judas and the Black Messiah and The Trials of Chicago 7. Let's get into it.
Countdown to the Oscars.
So nominations for Judas and the Black Messiah: they're nominated for Best Picture, Best Supporting Actor for Lakeith Stanfield, who plays Will, and Daniel Kaluuya, who plays Fred. We have Best Original Screenplay and Best Cinematography.
So for Chicago 7, they have Best Picture, of course. They have Best Supporting Actor for Sacha Baron Cohen, who plays Abby in the film. Best Original Screenplay, Best Film Editing, and Best Cinematography. So basically both films have almost the same exact nominations, except Chicago 7 has Best Film Editing included as well.
Yeah.
And but if you guys want to watch it before we get into it and do all the spoilers, Chicago 7 is free on Netflix, and Judas and the Black Messiah is actually in theaters, in some theaters. It's been out for a really long time, so if your theater does not have it, then the best way to watch it is to rent it for $19.99 on a bunch of platforms. So, yay! Let's get to these movies!
I know. I'm so excited to talk about them.
Me too. They were really, really good. So, obviously, spoilers. If you haven't seen the movie, you can go and watch it and come back, or if you want to hear about it and then go watch it, whatever you want to do.
Yeah. But make sure you actually watch before you listen to this, because this is going to be major spoilers. Major, major.
Yes.
As it always is.
The cool thing about both the movies is they are both docu-series, so they are based on true events, which makes it even more interesting to watch. Because if you think about it, that's kind of cool that two films that are both nominated for the same category, two of them are based on real events. That doesn't really happen that often.
And the same events, not the same events, but it is happening within the same time frame, which is so interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they didn't plan it, but it's really just like a fun thing that you can watch both of them and have a really good connection and link between the two movies.
Quite literally, because they both take place in Chicago in the late 1960s. And I literally watched it back to back. I watched Chicago 7 and then I went to the movies and I saw Judas. And literally as you're watching, because the way they came out, as you're watching Judas, you're like, oh my gosh, he was in Chicago 7. So it's really cool to do that because it makes it, I don't know, it's just very refreshing for the stories to be told together. And I know they didn't plan it that way, but it worked out amazingly.
Mm-hmm. And it's also interesting that like you're getting two very, very different realities. Not in terms of like different realities of like what's happening in the 60s, but you're getting two perspectives. You're getting like, you know, the like almost anti-government-esque in The Trials of Chicago 7, even though, you know, relates to Judas through Fred Hampton and the Black Panthers. You get like a mostly like, you know, white male perspective, and then obviously not all white male, but mostly white male. And then you get Judas and the Black Messiah, which is like really diving deep into like Black Panther life and Will and, sorry, Bill, not Will, honey.
Bill
and
Will.
Fred.
Bill Will.
yes, Bill Will. And really getting that perspective. And seeing their interactions with the police versus Chicago 7's interactions with police, all so interesting, but it's happening within literal moments of each other.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say too, that it was nice to watch both back to back, because anything that you wanted more of in Chicago 7, especially with the Black Panther Party, you go and you watch Judas and the Black Messiah. And Bobby's story is not unfortunately in Judas Black Messiah, but you know, you get to see, like you said, the other perspective of things happening. So it's really cool. And then you can connect it, because then you'll be watching it and you see the police in the exact same uniforms that they were in Chicago 7. Then you're like, oh my God.
And also, like, go off historical accuracies. How embarrassing would that be if Chicago, the policemen had different outfits, and then Black Messiah, they had different outfits, and you'd be like,
that would have been such a bad part in the costume designer, and I would have, I personally, as a costume major, would have been very disappointed. So I probably was just more happy about that. Yeah, I was more happy to see that they got it right in both of the movies, that they were like, okay, just so you know, because it sets the time frame really well, too, so things like that.
Mm-hmm. And we can't always expect these films to be, you know, completely accurate all the time. Sometimes they take liberties depending on who has the rights to what, so it is nice to at least have a feeling that it's mostly accurate, so you're not, you know, speaking bullshit to somebody later and they're like, that never happened, where did you hear that from?
As everyone knows, I'm like a huge history buff, so for me these movies might have hit me more because I love watching movies that are about history, and I love to look everything up after. I unfortunately haven't been able to look up everything to make sure it was accurate yet, but I agree that at least seems very accurate, and the credits have people on it to make it feel accurate, like the parts in the movies. They had part in the movie writing, so hopefully that's true. So if anyone's watching that is a history major and is like, they weren't fully accurate, I'm sorry.
I know I saw some comments like about Chicago specifically saying that like Abby wasn't portrayed as like, I can't remember if it's more radical or less radical, but the way that he truly was wasn't really accurately portrayed. But I don't think that's Sacha Baron Cohen's fault. I think that's more just the writing and like, you know, trying to make the story feel cohesive without having like an outlier there, here, things like that. So
speaking of, let's just get into Chicago. Do we agree with the nominations of Chicago?
I do. I think I agree with all of them. Absolutely all of them. But I almost wish that more people got Best Supporting Actor.
I was just about to say that too.
Yeah.
I 100% think they should have.
Because he was fantastic. Like, he did such a great job, but so did like the entire cast, really. Like, they did such an amazing job as a collective, as a group, which is why they're, you know, obviously getting Best Picture and everything else. But I think a little bit more recognition would have been nice.
I agree. I think a lot of them did well, not only because they were bouncing off of each other, but because in general, them themselves were really well in their role. So I 100% agree. I think more of the actors should have been nominated. I kind of understand why Eddie Redmayne wasn't nominated. I mean, he already has an Oscar, but that's probably not why he wasn't nominated. But he got an Oscar for his roles that were like really him being the lead. And he shines a lot when he's the lead. Not that he didn't shine, but which I'm glad. I would be kind of mad if he like outshined everyone else, because I think everyone did an amazing job. But I just think that he just didn't have enough screen time, and his character just wasn't big enough for him to be nominated for that in this particular movie. So I understand like why he wasn't, even though I do think his counterpart in it, Rennie, the kid and his name's Alex Sharp in real life, I think he did a really amazing job as well. So I wouldn't have been surprised if he did get nominated. And then who I really was upset about not getting nominated is, I apologize if I pronounce it wrong, but Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who played Bobby Seale. I think that he did an amazing job in that role, just amazing portraying it the entire movie. So that kind of made me upset that he wasn't nominated, because I think he did just as good as the rest of them, and he honestly a little bit better for some of them.
I was gonna say, he really, for the I mean, it's not that he had a limited amount of screen time. He was really there throughout the entire, you know, situation. Yeah. But like those moments where he was there, he was there. Like you exactly. really felt his performance and he was giving it his all. So I wish that they at least gave him that nomination. Even yeah. if he didn't win. So I don't know if he like should win it, but I think that nomination would have been.
Yeah, I think really he great. Deserved to be on that list. And, yeah. you know, let's see the other nominations for that list, because there might be a reason for that. Because if the true. Other two from Judas and the Black Messiah were nominated, with the two of them being nominated for similar roles, if all three of them got nominated for literally similar characters-ish,
yeah.
that might have been a little bit too much for the Oscars, quote-unquote, for the Academy to do. Mm-hmm. They 100% could have done it, but I think that's probably knowing them what they did instead.
Right.
The other okay. people who are in the rest is Leslie Odom Jr. in One Night in Miami and Paul Rossi in Sound of Metal, which we are going to be watching next. So, yeah, like I said, I think that because they made the choice for the two from Judas, that's most likely knowing them. Why they didn't make the choice for him as well, which kind of sucks.
So sad.
You know, they do some things that they're like, we're gonna great, and then they do some things that aren't great. And I think that
yeah, it's like way too many, like we picked too many Black actors. That's it. That's the cutoff is there, which is so unfortunate because
yeah,
there shouldn't be a cutoff. And it feels like there is one. I'm sure that's like, you know, unspoken thing, but how many?
Yeah, 100% have, like feels like an unspoken thing.
Yeah. And I'm sure if it was another year and they had all white actors, they were all playing similar roles like they usually do, the all five of them would be playing, you know, the same kind of man and all like get a nomination. Exactly. So very annoying, but that's how it be sometimes.
So it sounds like, though, that we basically agree with the nominations. I really agree with the yeah. film editing for this film. I think it was wonderfully done as a docuseries. Because I was telling you before we started the podcast, that I loved how they integrated the real scenes in real life, mm-hmm. and they integrated them extremely well, especially during the riots. It was great to the way they cut it, because yeah. I had this really big thing when I watch movies that are based on history that I get upset with people because sometimes they forget that you're watching a piece of history, because at the end they'll show you like the slide and the picture of them and like the little things that happen, which both movies did that. But the thing about Chicago, and as we get into Judas later on as well, that they both did wonderfully, was show you it either throughout or in the beginning. So it's a constant reminder to you that yes, you are watching a movie with actors, but this is something that really did happen. Because a lot of times mm-hmm. people who especially don't really like educate themselves. Well, that sounds weird. No, a lot of people.
No, that's not weird. That's correct.
Okay, perfect.
That's absolutely correct.
I feel like people who don't educate themselves and then they watch the movies, they just think of it as like a story, or they think of it as like maybe even if they're being opinionated about it, even though like how can you be opinionated on a historical movie? But people do that. They kind of be like, oh, this was fabricated, or oh, this was whatever. Or especially if they're older and they lived through that era and they're not of that community, they often will be like, that didn't happen. I would have known if that happened. I was in there. So that's why mm-hmm. I love when they do that, because and then people often connect the actors to it in a way, so that's how they really make it in their head think it's a like a story, like a movie. So I love when they do stuff like that, because then it reminds you, like, slap slap slap, wake up. Yes, you're watching a movie that was written and directed and has famous actors in it, but slap, 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 this is a real life story and these were real people.
Exactly.
So that's what I really loved about why I got the film editing as well and the screenplay, because it grounded the audience. And you know it's a good movie when it does that.
Yeah, and they did it well without making it corny. Because sometimes movies do that, but it feels very like, oh, there's a random piece of footage in the middle of this thing, or why did they put that thing in the beginning? That didn't make any sense, or things like that. So I thought, even though they did a really good job using it, it was still like, it felt like it made sense. It didn't feel like this is a history movie and this happened.
Yeah, or that they were, it didn't make it seem like they were relying on it either.
Yes.
They could do that too. They could have easily done it that they were relying on it. And then you're just like, okay, well, then I'm just watching old documentaries right now.
Exactly. Rather than watching might as well watch the History Channel.
Exactly. Yeah. So it made it be able to still make it feel like a movie, that it's enough that we can talk about it right now as an Oscar nominated movie, but also that it would still ground you in it and make you realize that, you know, these are real stories. I mean, you should know this, but you might not know it. So
yes, you should know this. And how disappointing that we, I didn't even know that this trial happened.
I didn't either, which I'm really sad about that I didn't.
Yeah, like it makes me disappointed in my own research.
Not to intertwine the two movies too early on before we talk about like the other one as well. What reminded me as well while watching it, it reminded me of growing up and the education that we got in our schools. And how, first off, we didn't really learn about a lot of civil rights stuff until we got to college, high school, and then obviously college.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then how it reminded me of how most of the things I know are because of myself and me reading. And it reminded me of what they taught us in school as about the Black Panthers, and how they basically just taught us like violence. That's all they really told us. So it was great because obviously I know more because I've done my research, but it was great to see a movie that maybe I know a lot of people who also got that education who probably didn't look the shit up because they should be looking up more things and reading more outside of their American education system, but probably didn't. Yeah. So now they're going to watch this movie and it's going to be great because like we were talking about before we got in the podcast, how it was refreshing that they're doing more stories that aren't often told in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Or aren't told right, like they're just not sometimes because the Panthers have been in movies for or been portrayed in movies nonstop, really. Like you always hear about the Panthers when you talk about Martin Luther King, you hear about the Panthers obviously with Malcolm X, you hear about the Panthers, so anything really that has to do with like that late 60s era of history. Yeah. But they're always portrayed as either extraordinarily violent, which was not always the case and not really the case at all. Or they're seen as like Malcolm X as like the head, and then everybody else was like handing out free things for kids. Because like the Black Panthers had this huge initiative to help community, like build community and you know, funding, not funding education, but you know, trying their best to give children in the community access to food and breakfast and things like that. But that was like, you know, the tiniest part of the Black Panthers on top of everything else that they did. But they always make it like Malcolm X was like the violent extremist, and then everybody else was just kind of there and feeding the kids in the morning and like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm glad that it was nuanced both in Chicago and in Judas, that they portrayed strength, but they didn't portray it in a stereotypical way that most Black people in movies, when they're put in that role, they are portrayed extremely aggressive.
Yeah.
When that's just not the case.
Yeah, because you're under, like, when movies do that kind of stuff, you end up not being able to understand them. And I hate that, because all of the movies, especially Chicago 7, shows you there's different ways to protest and different ways to be a quote-unquote radical and to be just a different voice in the world that you want to change. So when you're showing people just in that kind of one way, you're not understanding them. And that makes me upset when movies do that. So that's why I liked that. In both movies, actually, I really liked in both movies that you're able to understand them, because I think there is no one right way to protest, in my personal opinion. I think there's a million ways. I think every way is justified in its own way. So I think that's great that in both the movies you're able to understand them more, like the way they portray it. You're not just like seeing one side of it, and you're not giving the stereotypical sides of it either, which is really nice.
And Chicago, especially with Bobby Seale, like, did I say his name right? Hopefully I did. The way that they like showed the like pure hypocrisy of these men, specifically the white men that were on trial, and how they were being treated, even though they were still being treated like dog shit compared to how Bobby is treated in obviously real life, but specifically in the movie, how they showed it, because it was accurate. This is what they did to that man. Yeah. And to see that pure hypocrisy just because he was not only Black, but he was part of the Black Panthers. Yeah. And the Black Panther presence and just Bobby's presence and him being so adamant for his innocence and so adamant for his complete and utter shock that he was there. Like, why am I here? And please, you need to do something about it. I think, first of all, that probably threw the judge off because his perception of Black people, especially during that time, was probably not even close to decent. And
nope. And he showed it in all of his actions.
Exactly. So I'm sure his humanness, his ability to be a human being, as everyone else is, threw the judge off, and he took it out on him in such violent ways, where at the same time you have these men showing huge, the white men, that's Abby and Tom and all of them, showing these huge displays of disrespect, rightfully so, because the judge is fucking insane, but showing huge amounts of protest and disrespect and just like plain nastiness towards the judge, and they get written up.
Yeah. Exactly.
No one's chained to their chair. No one's taken out of the room. No one's gagged. No one's taken like their rights away. No one's humiliated. They're written up. They get a dock on their record. And that's just that example in itself.
And all of the commentary from the judge, like, he constantly is silencing him and telling him, no, we won't listen to you, whatever. And he didn't say the same things as much to the other men as well. And especially when they were acting like they're acting up to him. And right off the bat, though, just from the beginning, the fact that you already see that from the beginning when you walk in and the men, all of the white men get to just walk in and he's walking in chains from being in prison. Then you're like, wait, what? And they stress it so much in the beginning that he was only going for a speech. He wasn't even there. So then that already is setting up, it sets up the tone of the trial and the tone of the movie that you're like, a lot is going wrong right here. And you can see exactly what everything you're talking about just from right off the bat.
And it was so, like, it was heartbreaking because when they did end up, like, eventually gagging him and all of the lawyers, like, rushed up to the judge's, you know, stand, they weren't worried about his well-being. They were worried about the optics. They were like, really? Like, they were telling the judge, like, you're going to do this right now? And like, while everyone's protesting, they're not worried about Bobby and how he feels.
I think
they're
the only one was the lawyer, Will. He went up to him before he went to stand. He asked, can you breathe? Are you okay?
Yeah.
And then he went up to stand. I agree, though. Because then when, what is his name in the movie, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, Richard, he was mainly like, he was portraying things of uncomfortable, but he was mainly like, you are doing this in an American courtroom.
Exactly.
Should we be doing this in an American courtroom? So I agree.
Like,
even though they try to show his kind of like him, his character himself, like questioning the things, but a lot of his questioning isn't necessarily always questioning of the things that are going wrong in terms of morality. It's the things going wrong in terms of the law. And you saw that because he's questioning it in the beginning with the attorney general, how he thinks it's not a good case because it's not actually a case, and how he thinks it's like there's nothing wrong that was done illegally, but he still has to do this case. And then when he's going more in the trial about like everything going on, and then with this scene especially, he's just like, this isn't, like, what are we doing for the role of the American justice system? And then the end, he's really standing up when he says, don't you stand for the fallen. It's still not him being like, I agree with all the things that you guys are saying, though. It's more of like American legal systems. And then he's just like, I'm standing up for them, because a lot of people who are like that are still like veterans, war, you know? So that's more, I think, why he was standing up in the end, not because he was standing up a man, because he agreed with the men.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that the white man? That is the white man.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That he, like, and that's why I loved both of these movies, but specifically In Chicago, they really showed, like, where the white, specifically the white male, like, you know, cis male perspective was, and it, how they interacted with the legal system. And having that plain example there, it just makes sense. Like, why would they care about Bobby Seale in terms of well-being? Because during that time, they're just now realizing that Black people are human beings. And that is just crazy to us. And it should be crazy to everyone, but it's not.
It's not.
unfortunately. But, like, that's why it's, like, they're going up there and they're talking about, like, you can't gag him. But they're talking about it as if, like, well, like, think about what it's going to look like to the American people. Think about what it's going to do for law in the future. Not, how is this Black man doing? How is this Black man doing in a jury, like, in a room full of white people judging him on his appearance? Like, that just falls on deaf ears. And
yeah, and a lot of it's not even about, like, the human rights of it, of, like, a person is being gagged. It's more about the, just straight on the look, not the actual of, like, this is crossing borderline into not a democracy, borderline into something worse than that. You know what I mean? Like, you're crossing into what is the word I'm looking for? Not a communist society.
A fascist society?
Yes. Then you're kind of like, especially during that time, especially because they were extremely worried about that. Then you're really questioning the American government ways, because then you're kind of proving that if you can do this kind of horror, because they were doing all the horror you could think of, but they weren't doing it, and they weren't trying to show it in the public eyes as much. So in the legal system. In the courtrooms, that's what I'm saying, like, in the courtroom.
Well, they did. All throughout history, it was just this little speck of time when Martin Luther King finally, you know, was able to get out. Oh my God, why is history falling away from me now? But, you know, the late 60s, when rights were coming left and right, everyone was, you know, finally getting what we had been fighting for so long.
I'm saying, like, during that time, like, that's not what they wanted to. They wanted to show a perfect America.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
but like that, doing that to that man was common practice, and it's terrifying that it was common practice. And the only reason they were stopping it was because it would look bad.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they realized it now that it would look bad, but before that, it was just what you did.
Yeah, exactly.
Terrifying. Tell me what your favorite thing about Chicago was, in terms of like favorite part, favorite scene. Tell me.
That's what so was hard. I extremely loved this movie, and I know you kept talking it up so much, and I'm so glad you did, because it was such an amazing film. I understand why it's here. It's probably one of my favorites right now. And it had me crying from the beginning to the end. Thank God it was a movie you had to watch at home, because I was like, what? No, reacting out loud. If I was a movie theater, people would have thought I was crazy. It felt really fleshed out in the terms of this, like, of being able to portray the story. And oh my God, I just absolutely love this movie. What was my favorite part? That's really hard, because I loved it so much. I kind of loved the way that they intertwined you being able to see what happened in the event with the trial, rather than like, we could have easily saw everything that happened, then went into the trial and then saw the ending. I loved how the trial fell with what happened in the events, and we were able to integrate it with it, whether it was they were talking about it, whether, like, for example, when they were interviewing all the undercover cops, They were also side and side showing it with what happened when they were talking about each specific arrest. They were showing it. And then obviously the one at the end as well with the overall of them being beat up by the cops. I loved the lead up to that. I loved the dramatic filming of the taking off the badges and that being represented in the beginning and in the end. That metaphor was amazing, and those kind of metaphors, they do, because they still relate to the world around you today. So when they focus hyper focus on that kind of stuff, it makes you think, and that's why they do that. And I love when directors do that, because a lot of people, when they watch a lot of movies, they kind of take it for surface. And I like when people are able to actually see them for what they're doing in it, because movies and art, everything you do, every single thing in a movie is art. And when you're able to actually like really watch the movie and understand why the shots are shot the way they are, it makes it more powerful. So anyway, done with my little rant.
I love
that metaphor. 110%. I loved it. There were so many great moments. I loved the moment when they finally go to see Michael Keaton. And he's just like, I was waiting for you guys. I'm your star witness. Hated what happened. Loved the way they filmed it. Loved the way Michael Keaton performed it. Hated that he wasn't able to talk in front of a jury. And then I just like, I had so many crying moments. Obviously I was crying with everything that happened with Bobby. I was crying when they showed the part of the riot where the tear gas started and where the woman was attacked. I was crying just a lot in this movie. So what was your favorite part?
I think my favorite part has to be in terms of like how they put the story together. I agree with you. I love that they did it the way that they did it. Instead of doing it very linear, they did it in such a way that you're kind of finding it out with the jurors, and it almost makes you feel like a juror, like you are a juror that is getting, like, you know, you're when you're in the courtroom, I mean, because obviously we get to see behind the scenes as well, but and a juror would be able to see all that shit, but in the courtroom, they, the way that they film it, the way that they, the dialogue happens, it all feels like you're a juror watching it happen, because you're finding out all the details with everyone else. Like, you don't have really any preconceived thoughts. You don't really have any more information than the jurors do at that moment. And you're finding things out in the courtroom and in the scenes that they show while they're in the courtroom. And I was like, it's like piecing a puzzle together. And it's the most fascinating puzzle ever. And especially when we get towards the end and you're finding out that, like, Tom was the one that did that thing, and they have the recording of Tom, and he started the riot, and like,
and figuring out what he meant by it too.
Yeah,
he meant that to see their blood. Oh my god,
exactly. Like, it was such a well done piece of work to do it in such a way and to have it work like so successfully. Sometimes, you know, movies have tried to do that before, where they, like, you know, bring bits and pieces out as you're watching the movie, so you're kind of like putting it together in your brain. But I think when I did watch it, because I obviously watched it again to make sure I was like up to date on my shit before you started the podcast, but when I first watched it, you have this idea of who started the riot, who was responsible for it, like who were the main people. And to me, I was thinking, like, what had to be, like, based on what we had seen that so far, it was like Abby and his friend, what is the name?
Lee.
Yes. Abby and Lee. The whole time they're setting you up to think that, like, yeah, it was Abby and Lee. They were the ones that were antagonizing, you know, whatever. And then when you finally see the whole scene come together, it made my brain like explode.
That was actually interesting for me though, watching it. I kind of had kind of an opposite thing. Okay. Because for me, I felt like the movie very much set up from the beginning that this trial was basically fake and this trial was a political trial. And for me, it set up that it was like, I went into thinking a lot of the riot was like, just, it felt like the movie was setting up like cops in a way. And I thought that with Abby's character, that they were trying to show you to think more on him because they were stressing so much his speech. They were stretching so much about how Tom viewed him, and they're trying to like stretch so much about the opposite of them, but the meaning of them, to set up in the end when you get to the part of who should be on the stand, it makes sense. So for me, I didn't actually get that with the thinking it was Abby. I kind of just,
well, not that they started it. Obviously, like, not that they are the ones that should be in jail. I'm just saying that, you know, like, when we find out that Tom was the one that, quote unquote, started the riot by accident, like,
pushed everyone. Really.
Yeah. Like, it, they kind of show you that Abby and Lee are, like, really immersed in that protest.
I see.
From the themes that we're seeing. So, like, in your brain, you're starting to go, okay, well, if anyone's really responsible for, like, you know, being in there and having, like, a real part in whatever happened, it had to be Abby and Lee. But then you find out that the one boy that is, like, the one that's like, oh, like, standing up and, yeah, like, standing up when everyone else is sitting down, which was stupid.
It was just a reaction. Yeah, it was just a reaction. He literally read the note. Like I was asking that. Did you think that was actually a reaction, or he actually did it?
No, I think he actually did it.
Yeah, of course he actually did it. He was setting up the whole film that he clearly didn't want to go to jail. And the rest of them were like, yeah, if we have to go to jail, we have, like, the rest of them were either like, if we're going to jail, we're going to jail with what we're talking about. Or they were like,
exactly,
yeah, no shit, this is fake. But for him, he definitely was like little college boy who was scared to go to jail. So he was doing all he could to not get to jail. Yeah, 100%.
Like, he's like, fake or not, my ass is still going to go to jail. So, like, I need to do whatever I can. But, like, that kind of character started this chaos. And I thought that was, I mean, it's accurate, I'm pretty sure. But just to see that unfold was fabulous. Yeah. Loved it.
That's true. I did really like that. And I liked how you are thinking that too, like the way they set it up, but by the end, you're also seeing like the way that Abby and Lee were as protesters in general. Like, they very much like were very caring in it. Like, you would think that they, because of the, yes, they speak out, but they speak out, but doesn't mean that they're trying to get themselves, like, they're trying to like go against and start violence.
Yeah, they're not trying to do harm. They're trying to create change.
Exactly, which is shown really well, I think, in this movie, especially when they get close with the police the first time, they're the ones turning back. Mm-hmm. When they're going toward the hill, they're like, never mind. Like, yeah, all of that is shown very much in the film, which I really appreciate.
And the scene that you had mentioned earlier about the girl essentially almost getting raped during the protest.
Crying.
And he's trying to help her. And, like, all those things are happening. Am I talking about the right person?
Yeah. And Lee was there. It's Lee. Lee is the one who helps her.
Lee is the one, yeah.
Which also, so, like, what the fuck?
I know.
There's tear gas going around, and your priority is getting this woman and assaulting her right now?
It's like, what the fuck, but also not surprising in the slightest, you know? It's just so sad.
And people don't believe us that this shit is crazy. Like,
yeah. And that's why, like, and I thought it was also what I really loved about the movie was that it parallels everything that has been happening within the past few months, from the George Floyd protests in the summer on. I think specifically starting with George Floyd. Obviously, these protests have been happening long before George, but specifically when George Floyd, when all that happened to him, and the protests erupted, and you're hearing all these things about violent protests and violent people. And I thought every scene, you really can imagine yourself there now. And from what my friends were telling me about the protests they went to, and about how the police were reacting to them And you watch the movie and you're like, wow, things have not changed.
And not at all. Yeah, I can 100% agree. I went to some of those protests and I 100% agree.
It's a terrifying, recurring realization. I don't want to say it's a realization because obviously it's not the first time I've thought about it, at least, but it's a recurring thing that keeps coming up. Like, things are not changing. Things are not changing. And especially watching, just like in the 60s, the fact that this is happening in the 60s and we're in 2021, and it could be a carbon copy.
But it's also a reminder that this stuff wasn't that long ago. You know, when a lot of people talk about stuff like this today, they're like, that was a while ago. That's not the same America. Just remind, like, this was only this was like 60 years ago, not even. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, this was not that long ago. A lot of people that were there are very much still alive today. Yes, or their children, are. Like people that are very close. So it's very interesting. And what I was trying to find out too while we talked about this was it's interesting when things do that, when they parallel, because they're often not made when that's happening.
Yeah.
So like they film this movie, I'm assuming, usually they film it at least a year or so before it actually comes out. So it's mm-hmm. interesting that it's paralleling things that actually happened, which just speaks to its volume even more. That mm-hmm. this is not just the 60s and this stuff is happening today. And if this movie that was filmed that is commenting on those kind of things, that was filmed before things even happened, and then the things happen, it just even more mm-hmm. volume to it. So that's what I appreciate, that films are being done, and sometimes their reaction to life that's happening, like the exact moment, or the reaction to life how it is, and people just don't talk about it enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, art is a reflection of life, all art. And movies are always made in response to culture. And if our culture is ass, then the movie content is going to be exactly that. And ass as in, like, when life just sucks, that's what the movie is going to be about. And it's just sad that movie was probably contrived probably more than 2 years ago. And that was still, like, protests like this were happening 2 years ago. Protests like this were happening in 2016, 2014. So it wasn't like, it feels like, wow, this is really random that this came out at the exact time that all this stuff is happening. But it's really not that random, because I'm sure they thought about it. And they were like, well, what about the like people that died in 2016? And like, we need to make this for those people. And that it keeps happening.
It just speaks volume because of that.
Yeah.
Because if it wasn't something that wasn't keep happening, then it would come out and then people wouldn't feel that way.
Exactly. So sad.
Yeah.
So sad.
So it sounds like we really loved the film though. Is there any themes, anything that we talked a lot about the themes. So is there anything you liked the least in the film though? Because we're talking about a lot of things we love.
I don't want to say just something I like the least, but it's something that I constantly think about now, especially since going to college and spending a lot of time doing research on all of these things and, just being a Black Puerto Rican woman and dealing with the things firsthand. I'm just having an issue with, like, the white perspective in a lot of movies. And that's which just something that I'm a lot
just
of
most movies.
All movies. It's all movies, honey. All movies.
You can that's most movies, even movies that are about people of color, often directed and written by people who are white. Anyway,
yes.
Keep going.
That's why, like, as much as I love this movie and it's wonderful, it still makes me think, like, there's Bobby Seale, who's like, and this is, and obviously it's accurate. This is like history that we're talking about. So they can't put Bobby Seale at the forefront because he wasn't at the forefront. You know, like, this, it wasn't about him, but anyway.
Yeah.
Just to see that white perspective felt like, ah, yeah, hard life for the college white boy going to the protest thinking that he's gonna do whatever. Like, it's just, even though it's like a, it's a fresh take, it's still a take on something that's constantly talked about, like white people at protests in the 60s and the 70s and anti-government, whatever. And it's hard for me to kind of separate my feelings about casts that are majority white, even though the story, that is their story and you can't change that.
Also, because they were trying to show as well that they put Bobby there because the rest of them were all white.
Exactly.
They put him there so that way they could
make them seem scarier.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. So do you know what I mean? Like, and I know it's a very personal opinion and it doesn't really reflect the integrity of the movie. It's just something that I constantly think about. Especially when I was like watching Promising Young Woman. Great ass movie. But it's about a white lady. And I don't care. And like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's a point where I just don't care.
I agree. What do you mean?
Even though like the movie was fabulous. It's just like the same middle class white woman at an Ivy League college with her Ivy League prep boys. And I don't particularly care.
Yeah, especially with stuff like that. I always say whenever they're trying to introduce an issue, they started out with white people first.
Yes.
Then they go. Because if they did that movie and it wasn't a white woman, it would change the story in a way. Mm-hmm.
And it's sad that it would change the story. Do you know what I mean? Because it shouldn't change the story. Like, ideally, like I feel like a black woman could have played that story, but because of all of the implication in history that's put on that body, a black woman could never play that story without all of that following her. And it's unfortunate that there's not a ton of directors that are good at incorporating that background and that important part of being black without being like, this is a black woman, she does this and this, and now here's the story. It's so difficult for directors and writers to do that. Don't know why, but and that's why, like, it's hard for me to say that about Chicago, because I have to remember, like, this is history. You have a right to be upset about it, but it just is what it is. But it's always something that I think about.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think, for me, I was just trying to, I agree. I do that with all the movies I watch now too. I've been doing that for a very long time. I've been there for a very, very long time. Yeah, I agree. But what I do enjoy at least is that it's showing you kind of why it, like, it's just this history. It's just showing you what happened. And it's showing you how the story is from the back burner. Because when I was watching it the entire time, I was focused on Bobby for me.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Until he left this movie. So, like, yes, Abby was, his like story was interesting as well, but I was focusing on Bobby the entire time. And for me, I was waiting for him, like, his story to continue. So I 100% agree on that, but I also think that it's just history, so it's kind of hard for that. But it's also hard to not go in with the lens that you're already going in with, because we go into that lens with every movie. So
exactly, and with everything, it's hard not to as women of color. How do you not? But I have to separate sometimes. Just have to be like, this is what the movie is, and
if life was actually done the right way, if life was right, if movies were right and it was actually done a way that was right, you would be able to watch the movie and not be able to think about that.
Exactly.
If movies were, and then you'd be able to appreciate it without having that lens on yourself and having to do that. Mm-hmm. Because if movies were right, but they're not, so it kind of sucks.
Yeah, I agree. Which is why I love Judas and the Black Messiah. Look at that
segue. Transition. Transition. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. Judas and the Black Messiah. Do we agree with those nominations?
I do, but me and Sandy had a very interesting conversation about the best supporting actor. So
yes, we did.
Let's talk about that, because I agree with the best picture. It was great. I agree with the screenplay, even though I had notes for the screenplay and more about. So let me just start off. My notes for the film, by the way, for everyone, are not actually about the film itself or not about the story itself. It's about the film editing of the movie. So my notes for the film particularly are about the actual art of making the film, not the actual story of the film, because I loved the movie, but it's just my notes were mainly about like their film editing, which is understanding why they didn't get nominated for best film editing, because I didn't like a lot of the shots they did for Fred specifically. They tried to make it like dramatic shots in essence, where they had him on a podium doing his speech and it would be like camera front, camera side left, camera side right, camera back to front. And I just didn't, it took away from it for me. And some of them were successful where you were doing a side because you could see his power and it was closer to his mouth and closer to his face, and then you would see it in the crowd. That was successful. But some of the other ones just weren't for me. And the writing of it, I felt like they could have progress it a little bit more with some of the things they were trying to show, or they were like sprinkling things but not getting into it fully, like sprinkling Fred's story but not getting into it fully, or sprinkling Will's past but not getting into it fully. So that kind of bothered me, because if you're gonna do that, then commit to it. And then, like, for example, a lot of the scenes with Fred and Deb, I felt like were kind of like true, like weirdly done in my way, and that might have been because of the casting, which we can talk about, but I also feel like the writing of it, like, it dragged a little bit, and they could have done it in a better way to show their relationship a little bit more. Like, they showed the relationship, but I felt like they could have built the love in it more. I don't know if that's the writing or the actor's fault, because it might have been Daniel's fault, but it also might have been Daniel's fault. So that's a lot of my critique for the film, is mainly the actual editing and the director process of the film rather than the actual film itself as a whole. Anyway, rant over. We basically agreed on the best supporting actor was a little bit surprising, correct?
For Daniel. For Daniel, at least. Like, I think that Lateef deserved his nomination. Not that Daniel doesn't deserve it, but I feel like it's just Lateef did such a great job really getting down to Bill's whole demeanor and how he carried himself, how he spoke.
Oh my gosh. Sorry, Bill, I said Bill again. Yes.
Wait.
It's because we were just talking about Chicago, and Chicago, the lawyer is Will. So that's probably why we just kept doing that over and over again.
Oh, you are correct. Okay, Bill.
Bill.
Bill. Okay.
Sorry, so, guys. Bill. Names. Go ahead.
When Bill, you know, he really just got who he was and did a great job of not only looking like him, but also just being him, and exemplifying and acting as he would in those situations to the best of his ability. I thought that was great. Whereas Daniel, I don't know, maybe he just wasn't in it enough for me to be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. You should, you know what I mean? But also, I don't know if he necessarily played the best Fred Hampton, because you didn't get I feel like you just didn't get a sense of who Fred was. Like, you got the ideas of, like, his generosity, his ideas of community, his passion.
Kind of why, yeah, his passion, say why he's wanting to fight.
But I felt like that was like a plot device almost. Like, yeah. It wasn't really character development. It was like, here's Fred. Fred likes to do this. This is why he likes to do this. Here is Bill. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that also could be both on writing and acting. Because, yeah. Like I said, writing, I think with that, they could have developed it more. But also acting, because I feel like my thing with Daniel personally was he's a very great dramatic actor, but sometimes he kind of crutches on things he does. So it felt like every time you saw Fred, it was the kind of the same each time. Each time it's the same exact thing. And so it could have been the writing, because they didn't develop his story enough and like who he was other than what he was saying, who he was. You got what he was saying, but you didn't get who he was with it. And he could have maybe done that a little bit more with his acting, but then again, it's like, I don't know. I just feel like he was crutching a lot on the way he was. That's why you kind of probably did feel like more of a two-dimensional person in that.
And I just thought of this now, but Fred seemed more like an idea than a person. Yeah. And I think that's because they were focusing on Bill, which, okay. But if we're talking about Judas and the Black Messiah, you would think that their journeys would have equal value.
Well, because they're trying to kind of parallel them in the movie-ish. Yeah. They're trying. And also with that point you're saying too, is like more of an idea. That would be interesting if they're doing that, because that's the perspective that Bill technically is coming in with, because we're working with the FBI, and that's how the FBI sees him. Yeah. More of this idea than a person. But if they were doing that, you think that they would have gone with that Bill's journey along with that is learning that he's not just that.
But I think he did. I think that was Bill's journey, which is why he hesitated and didn't put all the poison in the drink. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that was what they were going for. But I think making Fred an idea, then also trying to give him development, because he was a character that was actually in the movie. It wasn't like Fred was never in the movie. Yeah. He was in the movie. He had lines. He had whole scenes with different characters. So they're trying to give him development, but they're also trying to push this theme of him being almost otherworldly. Like, Fred was this godly, like, he just, like, dropped out of the sky. He's going to save the world. Which is how the FBI saw him. Like, that he was, like, this, like, Black Messiah to the Black people, which is terrible. But that's how they viewed him, and that's why they wanted to take him down so badly. So then, like, it makes sense, but not really, because then he should not have been in the movie as intensely as he was if that was the case.
Yeah, then you could have been even more focused on Bill then.
Exactly. Yeah. Because they've done movies like that where, like, you have that character that you know of, that historical character, but you have the other person who has a relationship with that character, but you don't actually ever see them. Kind of like, Hello, Promising Young Woman. Speaking of characters that are never actually in the movie, but have a huge impact. Do you know what I mean?
Which is what I went into the movie thinking as well, because I thought it was more of a stress on Bill. That's what I thought too, going into it.
Yeah.
With the trailers.
I think that was the intent. I don't know if they fully or successfully did that, which is a shame.
It is.
And so, bad writing affects actors. Like, you know, bad writing, you can only do so much with bad writing.
That's true too. That's what I'm saying. I don't know whose it was, because like I told you before, with Fred's story, they didn't really go into him as a person, because like they would sprinkle it, like how they sprinkled him holding the newspaper of Emmett Till's death, and how his mom was the babysitter for him, and like that just sprinkled like a little bit about his past, but like not enough. Like, that's like huge, and you're just like sprinkling his reason for being there. So I feel like you could have sprinkled more about who he was, not just like him being passionate. Like, that's not a character development, that's just a character trait, is passionate. So that's why I agree, like, it could have been the writing, and it could have also been him. So that's maybe why we feel so like wishy-washy about why he's nominated in that category. So because of that, mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to win it.
No, I don't.
At all. I think it'd be interesting, though, if Lakeith wins it, though, over him. Like, that's going to be interesting. How are they going to be in another movie together?
I know. But that also, like, it was Lakeith's movie, you know?
Yeah. Well, if it was, he'd be nominated for Best Lead. That's why they didn't put him in lead. They put them both in supporting.
Strange. Just
because if it was, then what it would have been is what Lakeith would have been Best Lead Actor and Danny would have been Best Supporting Actor. But because the movie's not seen as that, it's seen as both of them, they got Best Supporting.
They really did not make them feel equal at all. Mm-mm. So interesting that they put them both in supporting. Kind of feels like there wasn't enough room, if we're going to be honest, in Best Actor, so they put them both in Best Supporting. You know what I mean? That's like almost kind of what it feels like. Which would be silly, because that was a huge movie.
They could have changed some of the people that are in Best Leading, to be honest.
Yeah, well, they could have. We also know the Oscars, you know.
Yeah.
So tell me what you liked in terms of scene. Like, what was your favorite scene? What was your favorite parts of the movie that you really enjoyed, and what did you not enjoy?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of things that I like in most movies are kind of always similar, like all the movies we talked about. Like, mm-hmm. The scene I was gonna mention is I just love when they parallel things. So I love how you're going back and forth in the scene where I don't remember his name, dang it. It was after his friend just got killed in the hospital, and then he went to the guy.
Okay. Death, I know who you're talking
about. They mentioned his name again in the end because they're gonna name the medical clinic after him, so it kind of sucks that I forgot his name right now. I'm so sorry. I loved watching, though, like when they do scenes like that, when you're watching it happen and they're talking about something that's related to the scene happening. So like, that was great for me. I don't want to say like the end was my favorite scene because it was very sad, but I love the way they shot it.
Yeah.
So the emotion and the power of it came through, and that's why that was like one of my favorite scenes in that. Mm-hmm. But not even just that. I loved the kind of montage-y of him making the Rainbow Coalition and like seeing mm-hmm. them come together, and like the scene of him going to the rednecks was hilarious.
Oh, and that so good
dying. So good. That was probably another part that I liked. But what about you?
I loved love is a strong word, but I enjoyed the end. I thought, and enjoyed isn't like I cried like a baby.
Exactly.
And was very, really distraught about it. Because I knew of Fred Hampton. I wasn't like, I didn't know everything about him. So I didn't know that's how he died. And I didn't know, I knew that the death was coming. I knew that like,
especially if you saw Chicago, you knew the death was coming.
Yeah. Like, I knew he was dead. I knew he died young. I just didn't know who did it, why it happened. And to know that, like, because in the beginning, you kind of get the sense that, like, okay, Bill is going to get him killed. It's just how and when. And to know that it was, like, his wife was, about to give birth? Like, she was popping out.
That whole time I kept thinking, pregnant, 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 pregnant. Literally.
No. And that's the thing, like, it was so hurtful because in my brain, I would not have been shocked if they had shot her as well.
Yeah.
Because that's just how it was. And my brain just like didn't even register. I was like, yeah, she's pregnant, but she's gonna die. Like, they don't give a fuck about whether she has a baby or not. Mm-hmm. Which was really painful. And that they kept shooting him over and over and over. And it was so sad because Bill, I don't remember how much poison he withdrew, but it was enough that Fred was going to survive. Which is why they shot him so many times, because they realized that he was alive. Which makes me want, like, it makes me like so angry at Bill. So angry. Because you didn't have to give it to him. You could have told him. Could have told him to run, and you did it. And if anything, you made his death so much more painful.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
and I don't know if Bill even knew. I know Bill knew that he died, but I don't know if Bill knew that, like,
it didn't work.
Yeah, like, it didn't work, and he was very much aware when he died.
Yeah.
And the look on his wife's face when they finished that
shot.
Mm-hmm. It was just like, And I think even though that was like cinematically a great scene, it's also something that I struggle with and why I kind of don't like movies like this, especially because there are so many, I think, what do people call it? It's like trauma porn. I think that's like the, and I,
it's a great way to describe it. It's like, I honestly I know 100% where you're going. Like, yes, this is a great cinematically, but you don't want to take away from it. And then you're going to just think it's a kind of leaning back to what I said in the beginning, that it's like a movie.
Yeah. Or also that, like, there's so many movies about the Black experience, but it's all related to violence and it's all related to slavery and death. And oppression and death. So you're watching Black people die over and over and over, and you're watching Black people get tortured over and over and over. And after a while, I'm sure that's why that desensitization happens. I said that so wrong. Like, you get desensitized to violence, especially when it's violence towards a certain group of people. That can be so harmful. Because you expect it
in the film.
Exactly. Not that you expected in the film, but then you go into real life and you have the George Floyd video and everyone's passing it around saying, like, you need to watch this, you need to watch this. But, like, you have 12 years a slave. You have every Martin Luther King movie that you could think of. You have Malcolm X movies. You have all of every slavery movie that I could think of, every movie about the 60s, every movie about things now. It all involves Black violence and Black death, and at a certain point you're just tired of watching people die like that.
That was similar to the movie, the Netflix documentary that talked about trans rights. Mm-hmm. And how with all the movies that they had seen growing up, it made you believe that that's what happens to trans people. They just get murdered. And they related it to how it actually happens in real life. And that's why people do it, because they see the movies.
Yeah. And that's why a lot of people, how could you watch somebody get killed on video and not feel your heart break in half? But for some people, that, like, videos of people, of Black people getting killed, is just part of their Instagram feed now. And it's terrifying.
I mean, they have opinions on it.
Exactly.
They have opinion on people dying, which is insane.
Mm-hmm.
That shouldn't be normal.
How could you ever? But you have movies like 12 Years a Slave, which, even though is a cinematically wonderful and heartbreaking movie, it's still one of those movies that almost, I don't want to say glorify, but it pushes that desensitizing feeling of, like, okay, but you watch Black people get killed in movies, so it's the same kind of thing. Like, I can watch a Black person get killed on video and it doesn't bother me. And that's terrifying, because every time I see any video like that, I have to take the rest of the day. Like, I can't, that is too much for me. But for a lot of
people, and that should be a normal reaction with anyone, because it should be too much to see anyone die.
Anyone dying on film. Like, it's different if someone's, you know, even getting assaulted on film is terrifying to watch. But to have a video on your Instagram feed of someone literally losing their breath, and you scroll past it, like, and you watch it and scroll past it, terrifying.
Yeah.
So scary. So that's why I kind of...
Oh, no, go ahead. You know,
sorry, that's why I get, like, strange about movies like this.
Yeah, because then it makes exact sense. Because then you're, like, you're reviewing it, like, let's say we're reviewing it as Oscar lens, cinematically, great shots, but it's the it's what comes with it, the implications of it as well. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you have this beautifully shot film, but what is it gonna do to Hollywood and continue doing that's already been building on Hollywood?
And I think, like, the story, there are so many stories that need to be told within that realm of, like, the Black experience and whatever, like, all those different things. But there's also so many beautiful stories that could be told, or just stories that have Black people in them, just regular life. And for some reason, Hollywood gravitates towards the movies that will inevitably have to deal with some kind of extreme violence.
Let me ask you this, do you think that in this movie they could have cut that scene out?
No, because this is history, which I feel like is a little different.
Well, in saying if they cut it out, because if they were focusing on Bill more, like, they show him doing whatever, you know, he's like, you know, Fred's gonna die, and then you cut to, I don't know, maybe a news or something like that of
because happened. I think if we didn't see Fred die the way that he died, the understanding of a human being killed and it being his fault wouldn't sink in as deeply.
Yeah, like, I agree.
If Fred just, like, you know, he found out at the, if we also found out with Bill at that dinner table with the police officer that, like, Fred was dead, here's your money, you can open up your gas station now, like, I think it would have been like, oh, okay, yeah, that was the plan all along, he's dead, and you kind of separate the humanness from Fred and what that meant to actually get somebody killed. So to watch the amount of violence that happened to Fred, it really brings it home to, like, A, the amount of turmoil that Bill must have been going through after the fact, and B, that this is, like, a human being that was set up to die. I don't know if that would have accomplished, it would have been accomplished as well without it.
No, I agree. I wanted to ask to see what you'd say, but I honestly agree with you, because I think, and also when you're leaning to the end of it as well, when they show his clip, it also brings power to, like, it makes sense with it.
Yeah.
And then finding out what happens to him as well, it really brings the weight of it. So I agree that it needed to be there.
And, like, this is a situation where this is valid. Like, this is valid to show it, because it's important to show it. Where there are some times where it's not necessary. It's just not necessary to show everyone being killed. But this is a place where I feel like, as unfortunate as it is and as hard as it is to watch it, it's, like, something that has to be fully watched.
Yeah. So do you feel that Bill, his story, and just, how do you feel about his story? Getting Fred killed, do you have sympathy to him? Do you feel like it's justified?
I think Bill is a really bad case of at the wrong place at the wrong time, but I also think that he had every choice. He had a choice in everything that he did. And I don't think he saw a way out because jail wasn't an option for him. He didn't want to go to jail. He didn't want to spend his life in jail. And the sentence they were giving him was just outrageous, but that was just the times, and that's what they did to Black men when they finally got them sentenced. Instead of, you know, for stealing a car or whatever, done, instead of getting, you know, the 5 years that anyone else would get, he was going to go to jail for the rest of his life. And I think, like, when you're faced with that kind of choice, it can be really, really hard to see a way out or see the benefits in the other choice. And I don't know if I were him that I would have chosen to have someone else die so that I could, you know, live my life. I don't know if I could have done that.
Live his life, but he was still haunted by it to have the ending he had.
Because he ended up killing himself anyway, and I don't know if that was, like, was it worth it? Was it worth it to have this man, this very important man, killed to save your ass? But in the end, all it did was just make it so much harder to live.
Yeah, like, how does an eye for an eye help you in that? Like, he gets to die, but I get to live. But then in the end, did it really help at all?
And that's why it's hard for me to find sympathy. But in also, you have to think about the time that this is happening.
Yeah.
Like, this is a Black man who was, you know, trying to make it, and he was put in a situation where he has to deal with the government. He's dealing with the FBI, and this is the FBI in the 60s, so it's even, whatever the fuck was going on back, like, in that time, was, I can't even imagine what they were doing to everyone. So I understand the desperation, and I understand the need to preserve your own life, and the need to be selfish.
And also them showing multiple other people doing it in the film as well.
Exactly. And in that case, because he's basically just, it's another form of exploitation of Blackness. Like, you're using these Black men to turn, you're using them to turn them against each other and doing all these terrible things to people in their communities, or not even their communities, but just in general. So, like, really, did he have a choice? I don't know. And he, like, I don't know if he said no, that they would have just gotten rid of him and found somebody else.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt in it too. Like, it was hard for me to have sympathy as well, but at the same time, you're seeing, like I said, the other people who are also in the situation that he's in, and you're seeing how quick he's just threatened, and how quick it's just like, "Why is nice and give you dinner," and then he's like, "Bam, but you're gonna spend the rest of your life in jail if you don't do this." Like, you see the life or death in it because of that, and it adds the story more about just the craziness of the FBI and just American whiteness. So I agree. Like, for me, it was hard. It's a hard, I don't even want to say like juxtaposition, but like kind of, because it's like, it's hard for me to feel sympathy for him, but you can understand his mindset in it in a way as well. And also connecting back to Lakeith's amazing performance and being able to do that for you. So I agree. It's interesting.
And like, I feel like it's a good example of what it's like to be Black in America in general. Like, once you're in a situation where there's whiteness that is controlling your life, I mean, there's no way out. Like, it's an impossible situation to imagine yourself in. And I say it like, you know, I was like, oh yeah, I don't know if I would put someone else's life on the line for mine, but I can't imagine what it would be like in that scenario, because I'm not in that scenario. And I don't know if that desperation would be so great that I would, you know, do whatever it took to make sure that I was okay.
I think there was no way out for him.
Yeah. And it's survival mode. It's like pure survival, which is like being Black is survival. And sometimes you have to do things that are really going to haunt you for the rest of your life, because there is no other choice.
Yeah.
Or you don't see any other choice that's available to you.
Yeah.
It's a hard one. It's hard.
It is
hard. That's why it was a very good choice to have the intent of making it Bill's story, because he has such an interesting situation that's hard to grasp for anyone, really, because how could we ever really understand it?
Yeah.
Do you wish the movie was more about Fred, or did you like that?
Well, like I said, going into it, I thought it was supposed to be going to be about Bill. So, like, mainly Bill. Not, like, mainly Bill. Like, I thought it was, like, kind of like what we discussed. So, if it was, then I felt like they could have balanced a little bit more then. But if it's just more for Phil, I wanted, like, or Phil, Fred. I think that the movie itself it wouldn't have made sense if it was more and more and more about Fred, even though I did want more of his story, because it would have made him a more understanding character. But like, if they're trying to show all of this with Bill and his story and making you ask all these questions as well, then it wouldn't make sense in a way.
I hear you.
Kind of like they had to pick the focus, in a sense.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people are asking, like, seeing it from Fred's point of view, do you think, like, or seeing, seeing Fred's perspective on Bill's choices, like, whether Fred knew about it, like, whether Fred was catching on, whether things like that, or if he was completely oblivious and you're seeing Bill in the background and you get to have Bill's perspective with Fred in the background, would that have made a difference in how much you actually enjoyed the film? Yeah. And I don't really know if Fred's story was necessary and for the to make it better. I think it would have made it better, as we said, for his character. But I don't think we needed, like, to see Fred eating breakfast and, do you know what I mean? Like, having, like, a main character role when he really, like, again, it wasn't his story that was trying to be told. Which is, you know, that's a hard one. And then, like, also, I want to know Fred's whole story. Like, I want to see it.
I mean, just especially watching the two movies, like, we literally are in, like, we're seeing Fred's death, and then if you go back and you watch Chicago 7, and then when they're telling Bobby about it, he already knows about it, and his line in it becomes more powerful for it, and then but then you're watching Judas, and then they're in the scene with the boss, and with the white boss, and he's just like laughing joking about it, and they're like, yeah, you know, the Bobby, whatever, we got a man down in Connecticut to lie and say that he killed somebody. And then you're like, oh my God, like, then you're watching Chicago and you're watching it unravel. So it's like that they bring so much power to each other in that essence. So that's why it's interesting that, like, they're together, because literally they complement each other in that, in those lines.
Yeah, I agree. So tell me, which one do you think out of the two? So let's just forget that there are other movies that are in the Best Picture nomination. Out of these two movies, which one do you think should win?
I don't know. I really don't. I think it depends on how the Oscars are going for. If they're going for, like, they want to go on, like, film-wise, it's going to go Chicago. But if they want to go more on the depth of some stuff, not that Chicago wasn't deep, but the depth of some things and kind of, like, metaphors and comparisons and things like that, I might lean more toward Judas. So I think it's kind of hard, because I want to see what their goal is as an academy. Yeah. But if I were to pick, I actually don't know. If I were to pick, I see the value in both of them. I see the value in how they both could win. It's kind of hard for me to pick, but I mean, I would say that I really did enjoy Chicago 7. So I'm going to just pick Chicago 7, but I honestly, I know I'm forgetting about the other movies, but I don't think either of them are going to win at the other movies total because of just how the Academy runs. But if I'm just thinking of the two, I guess I would pick Chicago. But if, let's say it was against Chicago and Judas won, I still wouldn't be disappointed. I would understand it.
Gotcha.
What about you?
I think I would pick Judas over Chicago, mostly because, again, Chicago is like fabulously made, but it's entertainment almost. Like it almost kind of passed that line from like depth to entertainment, even though it was extremely important story. Which almost turns me off, even though I loved it so much.
Yeah.
Whereas like Judas and the Black Messiah was such an unique story, in that it's not a story that's been told historically. Like as a historical movie, this is like, I think this is one of the first times that we've actually seen the life or a snippet of the life of an FBI informant that was like trying to, you know, get into that kind of situation.
Yeah, 100%.
So I thought that was, I think that's such a unique story, and Lakeith did such a great job at that story. All the characters surrounding him did a great job. So I would pick that just because of the importance of that story.
That's what I'm saying. It depends on what the Academy is going for. If they're going for depth and importance and story, and the way that, if you're looking at, this is the best picture because it was the best shining film on how it is seen and how it can affect the audience and how it can affect 2021. It is the best for that year. It not necessarily needs to comment, but it can comment. And it shined in its overall impact and storyline that I would 100% pick Judas. But they're looking for, you know, the entertainment, like you said, or the shininess of a movie, of it being a movie, then they would pick Chicago. So that's why it's hard for me to pick one, because I was like, I honestly don't know what kind of lens they are viewing this in, and what kind of lens they viewed it in, and why they chose it because of that. So I guess we'll find out when time comes.
Yeah, and you bring up like if it's good for that year, and now that I think about it, if they're gonna go with that, like let's say like they're thinking about what movie would best represent this year or like the past year, I think Chicago would be that would be the movie to pick, because it's literally the protest experience.
Yeah,
like that is quintessential towards 2020 and the later part of 2019, especially into 2020 and 2021. Like that's going to be a movie that's going to stand the test of time, really.
Yeah.
If things don't change. So not that Black Messiah isn't also that, but I think everyone could go immediately and be like, oh yes, Chicago is very much relatable to right now automatically. Where Messiah is, it requires a lot more depth, which I don't know if a lot of people would end up doing.
Yeah, that's what I think. It depends. And now I'm interested, when we're finishing these movies up, on who's going to win.
I know.
I feel like the most conflicted I've ever been watching the Oscar movies. Usually when I watch them, I kind of like, no. You know, like you kind of know, like Parasite was not surprising, you know?
Yeah.
And like the year for Moonlight, when Moonlight won over La La Land, not surprising. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you knew what was, you know, usually. And, or you have a feeling. And if not, it's because you like another movie more than what actually is. But, you know, this year I'm kind of getting a little stumped. And I think it's because I don't know what the Academy wants or is trying to do. And I want to see it. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's going to be answered at the Oscars.
Yeah, I'm so interested to see, because the movies are getting like they're getting better and better and better. And I haven't, like, they all, obviously no movie is perfect, but it's like, how do you choose? Which one do you choose? Because it's one thing to go like, oh yeah, out of the 8 movies, 2 of them are really good, so here are the 2. It's like, out of the 8 movies, we've watched 4 of them, right?
Yeah.
And all 4 have been pretty damn good. So
yeah.
Like, unless the other 4 are absolute trash, I don't see how they're.
Well, you've watched 5. Pick.
I have. They're all still good. Like, they're all still, they all have their place in Best Picture. Like,
which is interesting.
It wouldn't be surprising. I know.
You would think the year with no movies would be the opposite.
I know. But I think, like, everyone was just in their, like, in their feelings the past 2 years. You know?
They were ready. They were ready to come play.
The creative juices have been flowing. Everyone's sad and depressed and very lonely and dealing with the stupidity of the world and making bomb ass art. So, I mean, like, as you know, everyone's life kind of sucks right now, but at least they made their sucky life into beautiful things that we get to watch and enjoy.
Agreed.
So, can't hate that.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening to us rant about these 2 movies. Go see them. Highly recommended. Hope you guys agree with some of our opinions. And I think for these 2 movies particularly, I'm very excited to see what happens at the Oscars.
Me too. I'm just, it's going to be such a stressful night. So exciting.
Really though. Okay guys, stay tuned for our last Oscar episode coming right before the Oscars, and then obviously you're gonna hear our reactions after the Oscars. How can we tell you everything about the Oscars and then you don't hear what we think about the Oscars itself?
That'd be kind of nuts, wouldn't it?
Which is like,
can you imagine?
It's fine.
You're like, yeah, it's over. You know, that's it. Moving on.
Oh my gosh, that'd be hilarious. Well, have a magical day, guys.
Bye, everybody. Love ya.